So on Wednesday, August 30th, 2017, we are here in the VM Village at VMworld 2017. This is Gabe Knuth.
And I'm Jack Madden, and we've had a busy week, as I think I'll be the first to remind everybody that this is AirWatch Connect 2, because AirWatch Connect is no more, and it's rolled into VMworld.
It was hard to find the AirWatch Connect part of VMworld. We'd hoped it would be in a separate area, and it kind of was. It was called the Mobility Zone, and there was very few people in there going around, but we can get to that a little bit later. I was really hoping to get a sense of what AirWatch Connect was, though, because, Jack, you've talked about it so much over the last few years that it sounded really cool, and apart from some AirWatch people having some great conversations with some AirWatch people, I don't think I got the true sense of what AirWatch Connect was like.
Yeah. So we'll see. So, of course, if you've been following along, you've seen our live blogs that we did on Monday. And then why don't we just go into the first piece of news that was actually big enough for Gabe, you to blog about yesterday, the partnership with Frame.
Yeah, well, so this is part of the Workspace ONE story. What's funny, so Ruben Sprout, who is now the field CTO at Frame, is sitting right next to us as we do this podcast, but without a microphone. So if I say something wrong, he's going to shoot looks at me and maybe yell really loudly so that he makes it into the microphone. He says he's friendly, but we'll see. It's part of this overall Workspace ONE story from VMworld, and really, I think Workspace ONE is the primary source of our excitement. Is that the right word to use? Our work this week has been spent mostly around Workspace ONE.
This year, it really is, to give a little bit general flavor, sorry to step aside for a second,
but
to give a little bit of general flavor, from our perspective, this feels like the Workspace ONE show. Last year at VMworld, Workspace ONE, yeah, it was a thing, mm-hmm. but now it's the platform underlying so many different things, some other products that we're talking about. It's becoming such a huge thing. It's way more than just identity and EMM.
Well, actually, so this is a good place to start. So let's talk about what Workspace ONE has done this year, and then we can go into that. Because when we left last year, we were more or less introduced to the unified endpoint management concept. And we left thinking UEM is awesome. We, as in me, the desktop vert old guy, right? Like, you were already on board with managing devices with MDM, but taking those principles and using them to manage Windows devices was a cool concept with a long ways to go for how we're actually going to manage traditional Windows devices, get applications on them and things like that, and also configure them. And so this year, there's a lot of focus. VMware has been very, very busy in the last 12 months adding features to Workspace ONE to make unified endpoint management possible. They've added features like GPOs. Now we can take GPOs from our existing Windows environments and convert them into something that we can deliver with AirWatch, for example. They've added some other stuff around software deployments. We will get into that stuff in a little bit as well. And now, to get back to what you were talking about, though, with the blog post that I wrote yesterday, I think it was, they also announced that they have partnered with Frame to deliver DAS-based applications, cloud-based Windows applications. The first thought in a lot of people's heads is going to be, why didn't VMware just use VMware View or VMware Horizon Cloud or DAS or whatever? Because VMware already has these platforms. And the way to look at that would be, all these Workspace ONE customers they're coming from the AirWatch side, right? They're trying to solve that kind of use case. They're MDM thinking people, not traditional PC management type people.
Their reps are in Atlanta.
Yeah, their reps are in Atlanta, for example, right. So when they're having a conversation with a potential customer, and the customer says, great, I'm bought in on this, I want to use this. Oh, by the way, I also have these Windows apps that I need to get access to as well. What do I have to do in order to use Workspace ONE with these Windows apps? The answer of, well, you have to set up this bloated, monolithic VDI platform just to do a couple of applications is kind of a deal breaker. And it's not that Vue is bad or Horizon DAS is bad or anything like that. It's just that we went from this really slick, easily deployed thing to, oh, now it's a big project.
And yeah, it's suddenly your mobile-centric world that started out with iPhones and grew into Android and mobile app management and some identity management thrown in there. And you know, there's I should mention, there's of course, we say, oh, that's the simpler world, but there are a lot of very, very important details to figure out that we can get into those later.
But the propeller hat you wear spins a different direction.
Yeah.
When you're coming from that side, is this side. And so that's where it makes sense to partner with somebody like Frame, who is as close as they're going to get to swipe your credit card, three clicks, and here's your desktops and applications. And so from a simplicity standpoint, from a onboarding standpoint, you know, getting these customers into the fold, I think that partnership makes a lot of sense. And the way it's implemented is more like a I'm going to call it like a plugin or something like that, where if this is a use case that you need, Workspace ONE supports a connection to Frame that can enable you to deliver these applications. So it's not like Frame is built into VMware or, you know, that kind of a thing. It's kind of like a third-party add-ons kind of scenario.
Although they are relabeling, they're calling it, what is it, Workspace ONE App Express?
App Express? Reuben? Apps Express? Is that what it's called?
Workspace ONE App Express.
Yeah. So it is getting labeled that way. But it was described, and I know you're off mic, but you know, you can scoot in closer or something. It was described to me as there could be other providers in this as well at some point. Like, it was architected as a framework that other vendors could attach to. Okay, Ruben's nodding. But currently, it's labeled as VMware Workspace ONE App Express, and Frame is the go-to partner for VMware at this point.
And that sort of open, being able to plug in things, for those of that have been following the AirWatch crowd for a while, that's how, you know, you've always been able to plug lots of things into AirWatch, not just on the device side, but on the management side. With the Mobile Security Alliance, you can plug in mobile threat defense vendors. They had another alliance around MadPs a few years ago.
So this is not deviating from how Workspace ONE is architected or anything. So
yeah.
I'm very excited about this. I wrote recently about Frame. I'm excited about what Frame is doing. Frame supports AWS and Azure now. They just received some investment money and from Microsoft, in fact. And so a lot of good things are happening at Frame. Big focus now on enterprise desktops. It was just high-end use cases, but now they support domains and things like that, and they're trying to get a push into the enterprise. And so a lot of good stuff going on there. And I really like this partnership.
Yeah, and the one thing people...
And they hired Ruben as the field CTO.
Yeah,
sorry. Yeah.
Well, so the one thing that they may be thinking about is, well, hey, Microsoft invested in Frame. How do they feel about Frame partnering with VMware? And I know there are a number of different answers to that question, but one of the answers is, hey, that still means Azure usage.
Right. Yep. And yeah, I mean, I'm sure, you know, depends on who you ask and in what company. But, you know, at the end of the day, yeah, it's more Azure usage, more Windows being used, you know, can't be bad.
So. And Horizon on Azure is more Azure usage.
Yeah, that's true. Yep. So even though VMware might not have Brad Anderson on stage during the keynote, it's still good for everybody.
Yeah, and I guess Horizon on Azure, that was all the way back. That was the announcement that you called the Citrix Thunder Stealer. So that gives us an idea of, the summer went by fast. But that was the other bookend for the summer.
First part of May. Yeah. And now, so they announced a beta of that, and so we can crack that open here shortly and see what that's like. It's what you would expect. It's Horizon running on Azure. I mean, it's just instead of running it on servers that you have locally, you're running them on the cloud instead. Instead of running your desktops and broker and things like that locally, they're in the cloud. So we'll find out what people think of that in the near future, now that that beta is open, and we'll see how it actually behaves and things like that.
Yeah, and I can see Microsoft's and Citrix's competitive messaging against that forming in my head about how ZenApp and Zen Desktop Essentials, you know, were architected to actually run on Azure. And
I think VMware could probably say the same thing though, you know, now, because I mean they had to do some work to make this work. So, you know, it's been technically architected for Azure as well. We'll see. At the end of the day, it's just an equal feature set now. Because now if somebody calls VMware and says, yeah, but does your platform run on Azure, they can say yes.
Yeah, yeah. So. And when there are differences, so That'll come up again, skipping ahead a little bit. One of the things that I had talked about or written about a few weeks ago is AirWatch or Workspace ONE support for the Microsoft Intune Graph API, which, interesting, so they did, in not so many words, they did announce support for that, and this is the integration with Intune where you can, you know, use another EMM vendor to connect to APIs to the Intune platform itself and use that to manage the Office apps. So they talked about that on Tuesday afternoon, but the funny thing is they did not use the words Intune or Graph API when they talked about it or in their press release.
But it is that?
Well, so the functionality that they showed, they're showing Office management functionality that is, there is no other way to get this Office mobile functionality other than through the Graph API.
Okay, so, but in order to get that functionality, in order to get access to the Graph API, don't you have to buy Intune?
Well, yeah. It's just interesting that they said, we're supporting these Office mobile management features, and they put it that way instead of saying, we're supporting the Intune Graph API.
That just sounds to me like, okay, you bought Intune, but you can still use us with that too. Like, because you, if you already own Intune, how close does that get you to the goal of, you know, the proper amount of management? Like, so you still have to buy?
I mean, the very widely held consensus is that AirWatch's EMM stack is
more comprehensive.
At least a couple of years, you know,
ahead of
two or three years ahead of where, yeah. And obviously it depends on which particular features you're talking about. But we're talking two very different products.
That makes sense. But
they're going to
compete, I guess, is the thing. Like they'll be a little bit more even, I would think. And at that point, it just seems.
Well, I'm sure
it's not a problem.
We're getting off on a tangent now, but then once that happens, then we'll also wonder about the Intune to Zen Mobile relationship as well.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll table that for a future podcast where we dive into the complexities of.
my point is that that's another thing where VMware can say, oh yeah, Office app management, we have that, whereas. You know, as I mentioned in that article that I wrote back when this was a hypothetical thing, there's still a few unique things in the Citrix to Intune relationship that VMware won't have in its relationship.
Gotcha.
To Intune.
So Citrix needs to work on exploiting those. I mean, there's a lot of we've talked to a lot of people, all the people in the mobility area that now has replaced AirWatch Connect that we've spoken with. None of them mentioned the words Zen Mobile when talking about management platforms. They mentioned all the other ones that you would expect, Good and MobileIron and things like that, but Zen Mobile never came up. And I asked a few of them if Zen Mobile was on their radar at all for building features and things like that, and they said it wasn't, which was surprising to me because, you know, you'd think that somebody out there would be using it and prioritizing it. And where I'm going with this is, if Citrix has an advantage over AirWatch, they need to be capitalizing on that before it's too late.
Yeah. So, with all the Citrix and Intune conversation.
Right, at
VMworld.
this week, like I said, it's been a Workspace ONE kind of week for us. I mean, there was very little, if any, talk about Horizon View. Or any of that, apart from it works on Azure now. Now, I'm not saying there wasn't any. I'm sure there were plenty of sessions about it, but at these shows, we pretty much spend our time walking up and down the expo hall talking to everything that looks interesting.
Yeah.
We're talking about everything that looks interesting. What did you see? We split up a little bit today, and you went over and looked at mobile flows. Did I say that right?
Yes. Okay. I looked at mobile flows, and I looked at Workspace ONE intelligence. So the mobile flows, of course, is the workflow app capabilities. So probably the first question is, what is a workflow app?
Yeah, and I walked up while you were getting some of this briefing, and I thought, you know what, I'm not even going to stick around. I'll just let you tell me about it here. So this is new at the show. like new here at VMworld?
New announcement here, okay. Here at VMworld. So a workflow app is basically it. The example that they always use is expense report approvals. You have, you know, maybe all these legacy expense report systems. Mm-hmm. You want to just pop up the relevant information to a user so that they can just say yes or no. So what a workflow app involves is connecting to various legacy or newer back-end resources and being able to aggregate information across multiple back-end data sources, but surfacing it in more of an event-driven way. You know, they'll talk about the term like, you know, 15 seconds or 30 seconds interactions.
Instead of one app that does a million things, this is like a purposeful interface that does one thing or a handful of things.
Or so like you'll have these, some of the vendors, they use the term like cards. So it'll be a thing that pops up as an event. It's sort of like a more advanced actionable notification.
Okay.
So that card, you can surface it in a variety of locations. So they announce they have an SDK that you can use to surface these cards in whatever your custom app. They can be surfaced in the bodies of emails. They will have a mobile flows app that can surface them.
Okay, so I was going to ask, like, how does this compare to PowWow? Because it kind of sounds like how PowWow works with their specific task-oriented applications that they help create. And it sounds like that. And I saw the same demo you did, but separately from PowWow. And so the whole time I'm thinking, I got to talk to Jack about how this fits in. And so I purposely waited until now.
Yeah, and we have to separate like the client end and the backend integration end, and then the middle logic layer.
Okay.
So the middle logic layer is they're building that in Workspace ONE.
Okay.
And since it's part of Workspace ONE, that layer can have a lot of access to information about all the user context they need.
Okay.
And I was just outlining the client layer, which, as I mentioned, the SDK or the app, or they also showed a demo of this showing up in one of the Workspace ONE desktop apps.
Okay.
So anywhere you're working, you want to be able to see these like cards or notifications or whatever coming up.
So they're going to make an app for that? So that you don't have to do any integration with your other stuff. So VMware will have a mobile flows app just for those cards.
Yeah.
And then apart from that, you can also integrate it into other applications.
Right. That could be an in-house app. That could be one of their partner workflow apps. They mentioned, Capriza, PowWow, mm-hmm. Sappho, and Dell Boomi.
Gotcha.
So then you have the logic part in the middle, and on the other end, you have to have all your various connectors, of course. So obviously, Workspace ONE, there's a lot that it can see and act off of on its own. And I'll have to look on my notes to be sure. So the connectors that they have built natively so far are Jira and Salesforce out of the box.
Okay.
Mobile Flows can connect to that. So through the partners, the Capriza, PowWow, Sappho, and Boomi, they can also take advantage of all of their connectors. So those four vendors have a much wider array of connectors to, you know, all sorts of different applications.
So we can try and Concur and Oracle expenses and things like that. Okay.
Or like in the case of PowWow, old legacy Windows apps. And that's what we saw in the demo booth. Mm-hmm. So they're taking...
We're talking about PowWow now.
Yeah. So PowWow, they're taking some old custom, stock keeping app, pulling data from that into... they're acting as a connector to bring it into Workspace ONE Mobile Flows. And at the same time, they were demoing both ends of the integration.
Presenting it to the end user.
Using the SDK to bring a card. You can't see I'm making air quotes when I say card. I think that's the term that people commonly use.
Yeah.
So as you can imagine, there are a lot of different ways to put this together.
Well, that's where PowWow is using. It's not just Windows applications. They're using multiple different application data sources to create almost a new mobile app.
Yeah.
That's not entirely correct, but I mean, Powwow these days, they've morphed into like a real ARMAD.
Yeah.
That just also happens to support Windows applications as a source of data.
And the thing is, there are a lot of different ARMADs out there, and they all have various things that they specialize on or different combinations of features. So it's almost like figure out what's important to you and then go out and look for the ARMAD that will fit that role well for you. But the thing about mobile flows is that since they don't have the pricing figured out, it is going to be an add-on. So it won't be completely included. It won't be free,
okay,
but it's relatively integrated. I like the idea of having one that's, you know, if it's not free, at least since it sort of almost, quote, comes with what you're getting, what you already have with Workspace ONE, you can dip your toe into the waters of making workflow apps or doing mobile development.
And maybe that's the... That would be the app that you get, like just the mobile flow app that they would provide. And if you wanted to actually integrate that into other things, then you have to pay for it and get the more advanced platform. And because that way you could dip your toe in and then think, oh, this is cool, I can use this in other ways, and then grow it from there.
Yeah, I should also mention, I was looking over my notes again, they also have an open source connector kit. So you can connect other things on your own directly to mobile flows.
Oh, okay.
So I was talking to some of the product team, and I mentioned that like this could be your gateway drug for building mobile apps.
Ooh, man! All right, one step at a time.
So that was mobile flows.
Okay, so that's pretty interesting. The other thing you talked with them about was Workspace ONE Intelligence. Workspace ONE Intelligence, right?
Right. So this came. Yeah. So there are a couple components of this. So this came from their AppTelligent acquisition in May, and that's like app analytics. An app crashes, see what's going on, see what screening, or you know, do breadcrumbing, all that. And so that of course is still available, but prior to that, AirWatch had some of its own more device-centric analytics stuff. Actually, last year at AirWatch Connect, they spent some time on it in one of the keynotes.
Okay.
And that's doing things, imagine, like looking at battery levels and looking at when batteries will die and how devices are performing and stuff like that. So
that was all pretty rudimentary stuff that they talked about last year. Cool, but like not very deep information. Now we're talking about more information that we can create actionable workflows.
Yeah, AppTelligent is bringing you data from the apps, and they have all sorts of ways to integrate with the apps. And AirWatch, or I guess I should say Workspace ONE, is bringing you information from the devices. And so now they're bringing that, it's bringing identity data. You know, about the user's authentication and access activities. And so they're bringing that into, they use the term data lake, and this is probably the first time I've ever used the term data lake.
And, right, because normally you just think it's a bogus marketing term or something like that.
But I guess having data from the apps and from the devices and from the identity stuff in this data lake makes it easier to consume into machine learning processes. So then they can start to do all sorts of more predictive things with that.
Analytics and, kind of work on all of this stuff. Yeah, that's interesting.
And then of course, because it's built, it's all part of Workspace ONE, that means that it's hooked up to your policy engine and your remediation engine. So they're really, what's really becoming much more apparent this year than, I mean, it was apparent last year, but what they're really emphasizing is the world that you get when all of your policies can be applied instantly because UEM is over the internet and instant, unlike, you know, we connect to the VPN hopefully once a week and have enough time to push down an update.
Right.
And there's visibility into your activity on mobile and in your web app access and on all of your devices.
Right.
So there's all that context together, and not just visibility, but also remediation through access policies and AirWatch policies.
And this enables all of that far and beyond what we talked about or heard about last year. Because they talked a little bit about some of this stuff last year, but you could tell they had a ways to go. And now they're there, it looks like. I mean, I'd like to use it or hear what other people actually think of this and how it meets their expectations, whether or not it meets their expectations. But it sounds like, regardless of how people feel about it, they've come a long way in the last year.
So this is where I'm curious. So we always talk like you're very much have some roots in the old school of desktop management.
Yeah.
And but when certain obstacles in old school desktop management go away, and suddenly you have this visibility across everything, and the dynamic policies and remediation and everything, mm-hmm. like it just seems like such a different world.
It is. So their abilities to, if you can't tell, we're on the expo hall floor. There's some activity going on behind us while Morris Day and the Time is playing on the speakers above us. There's a lot going, a lot to this question, right? Because there's this feedback, this monitoring, this, you know, all of the stuff that we can get from the intelligence stuff. But in addition to that, we also have to deal with all the software deployments and things like that, which is another thing that they talked about.
You're queuing up.
I almost have to answer your question with some Adaptiva type stuff too. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so here's what VMware's goal throughout the last year has been to build UEM in such a way that it will supplant Config Manager. And because that is assumed to be the de facto standard across all enterprises. It might not be Config Manager, it might be Landesk or something like that.
Right.
But they want to get rid of imaging, they want to get rid of software distribution, or they want to replace imaging, software distribution, and monitoring. And monitoring was not something SCCM did very well to begin with, but the other two are far and away the most used things out there.
And with Windows updating every 6 months instead of every 4 years.
Exactly, and enforcing that.
If you're coming from an enterprise mobility world, you're used to your updates. You're used to not imaging, and you're used to pushing your updates all the time and just rolling with it.
And onboarding devices without imaging and things like that. And it's a lot of stuff that had to happen in order for UEM to rival our old methods or to be able to replace them.
And those are all the changes that we started.
All of those things.
And of course, these are the changes that we started seeing in Windows 8, but it took until a couple versions into Windows 10 for all this really to fall together.
Yeah, and everybody laughed at Windows 8 anyway. So, but it was good because Microsoft has been enabling this as well with all the changes they've made, and really they just cut their teeth on Windows 8 too, and so it was ready by the time we got to Windows 10, and they continue to add features every time we get a new version of Windows 10, which happens every 6 months now. So, which in a way is good. In another way, it makes your hair fall out. But it only makes your hair fall out if you're managing things in a traditional way. Because now it's every 6 months. Ah, crap, I got to reimage all these desktops again to add these new features.
And to do that, you have to update SCCM to do that.
Yeah.
Now, of course, they have made SCCM a lot easier to update. Even, in fact, the SCCM servicing model, I think we have some articles from earlier this year from some guest bloggers on that.
Yep.
And so to be fair, servicing Config Manager is also a lot different than it used to be.
Yeah, very true. But still, the processes are similar. It is, they've made it a little bit easier because they had to in order to support this new OS model that they have. But anyway, all of these things individually are a challenge, and really for UEM to replace traditional management, all of them have to be dealt with. There has to be an answer for everything. And so that's what VMware spent the last year doing. They went and got this partnership with Adaptiva, where they're using that for software distribution. Within the last year, I don't remember exactly when, but when VMware built a partnership with Akamai so that they could have a CDN and deliver software out of that CDN to devices, which is great for remote devices that are internet connected and can just go pull that stuff down, But when you're using it on-prem for all of your devices, it becomes a challenge because now all your devices, when they have to get an update, are going out to the internet to pull this stuff down from the CDN and pulling it back down. So you can really jack up your internet pipe doing that. And so this partnership with Adaptiva allows them to, and I wasn't all that familiar with Adaptiva because they were always just outside of our scope of things that we cover. But so, you know, this information might be new to people listening or might not be new to people listening. But the way Adaptiva works is they sort of establish this peer-to-peer software distribution grid inside of an environment. And so the bits are only downloaded one time, spread amongst all the machines that are in there. And then anytime somebody needs an update, instead of going out to the internet to get it, they just kind of broadcast around the network and pull the bits in as they need to get this. And if it doesn't exist locally, then they go and get it from the cloud and pull it back down. And this works even better for remote offices who would otherwise have to get out to the internet, have to traverse the WAN, which is probably even slower than the internet and can really jam up an entire office. And so this makes a lot more sense for widespread UEM software, UEM-based software deployments.
Yeah, this is a modern beyond corp way of doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
So there are so many details in there that, so we talked to Sean Bass last night and we spent an hour talking to Jason Rojak this morning.
Right.
And taking copious, furious notes.
That we still have to go distill.
There are just so many details in there about what they've done. And
yeah,
Gabe, would you say that you're impressed and satisfied?
I mean, again, without knowing what the actual end user experience is like, we haven't talked to any customers or anything like that, and we haven't seen it in action. All we have are the conversations that we've had. Without that, I would say yes. They've done a great job. I think they've satisfied a lot of the goals by doing this, but I reserve the right to change that, when I actually see it. We did kind of make a play date, though, to go to Atlanta and like hang out with the AirWatch guys for a couple of days and go actually touch, see and feel how all this stuff works, which I'm actually legitimately excited to go do. Normally, if you're like, you have to get on a plane and go to somewhere for 3 days and like hang out with people, you're like, all right, if I have to, but I actually really want to go do this. So that's the Adaptiva stuff. We were on Workspace ONE Intelligence, right? And then,
yeah.
And then, well, what was your question to me?
Right. So my question was, hey, seeing how this whole new world of device and user and app management works with everything, with things like software distribution or being much different, and servicing and provisioning being much different than they used to.
Right. Okay. So here's how the Adaptiva stuff plays into the intelligence now. So now we have the ability to gather all this information on what updates are installed on our devices, what software packages are, what versions of software and things like that. We know licensing information now, or we can keep track of licensing information. In the past, in a System Center Config Manager kind of way, we would have to have, if a user needed an OS update, they would have to be connected to the VPN on a fast enough connection to make sure that WSUS server or whatever sent down that update fast enough for them, to receive it, and then we'd have to make sure that the user rebooted, and installed it and rebooted and got that installed.
Never mind the reporting to know that
it actually was installed.
That patch yet first, and then confirming when it's done.
Exactly, and that's just Windows updates, not application updates and things like that. So that challenge gets larger the more things that we're actually trying to do through that connection. Now, because of the Adaptiva and because of the CDN partnership with Akamai that VMware has, now those updates, we know because of Workspace ONE Intelligence whether or not these users have that. And Workspace ONE Intelligence will automatically say, okay, this person needs that. And as long as that device is connected to the internet and communicating with the AirWatch server, it will get instructions to just go download this. And it doesn't have to be in the VPN. It can just go get it from the CDN and pull down what it needs. And it will report back to AirWatch or Workspace ONE that it has these things and it's now up to date.
And remember that some of these policies, depending on the policy, obviously, can work even when the device is offline.
Right, and we get to take actions on devices that are out of compliance.
Yeah.
And so there's a security update. We can quarantine that device if it doesn't have whatever, you know, Windows update is required to make it, you know, so that we can deem it as secure. It will automatically quarantine that device and say, you don't get to use Office or Dropbox or OneDrive or whatever until you get this update. And then it will automatically go get that update, report back that it got it, AirWatch releases the quarantine, and everything carries on like normal.
Now, all of this stuff,
you can't do that shit with a CCM.
All of this stuff is so new that they were only giving video demos.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So we have to see if this works as advertised. Yeah. It's spot on.
That'll be the we'll see in, you know, Atlanta, hopefully, is seeing how...
I want to see it actually working.
Yeah.
Not a video of it. And so that's what I mean. And there's probably stuff we're leaving out of this, but...
But still, so as put on your crotchety traditional management hats for a while, and...
Done.
Doesn't it seem like, so as a mobile person, I'm like, yeah, this is how we've always done mobile devices. So isn't this cool?
Yeah, it is. The problem is, I don't know if I have a crotchety old-timey admin hat. I mean, I am an old-timey admin, and like the way you do this, you know, in my history is a pallet full of Dell's second cheapest PCs comes in on the loading dock, and you get out your ghost, you know, boot disk, and you boot it up and load them up, you know, image them, and then deploy them, and you know, but everything takes touching, and you have to spend a lot of time with it, and if you need more applications than were in your image, you have to add those applications, and all of that was a pain in the ass. It was a pain in the ass back then. It was just the best that we had. And so if you're telling me we can do all this now, we haven't even talked about the out-of-box experience, which I think you guys call Ubi.
I've never called it Ubi, but I guess that's the...
I've heard that today. Yeah. So... if you're telling me there's a better way to do all this stuff, and also I get to manage all my devices the same way, including Macs and Chromebooks and stuff, hell yeah, man, I'm in.
And we haven't even gotten to the part about the GPO mapping.
Yeah, okay, so last year, this is my biggest thing coming out of the show, was UEM sounds great. I'm not dismissive of it, so let's just see where it goes. But you're going to need to find a way to replace GPOs, and you're going to need to find a way to help me still connect to domain-based resources like file and print shares and things like that, because as much as the UEM vision is outlined by VMware last year was great for greenfield companies that were starting from scratch. And
like, if you have a Surface.
Yeah, right. Everybody gets a Surface and an iPad and a Chromebook. You know, then we're fine. As much as I could see where that was good, that's not how companies work. I mean, we talked to a customer that had 7,000 FinApp applications in their environment, which are 3,000. It doesn't really matter.
First, he said 3,000, then he said 5,000, and now it's 7,000.
No, it was 3,000. That's right. And where I got 7 was, and they're not all running Windows 10, they're running Windows 7, right? So, because we haven't felt the fire under our asses yet to get off of Windows 7, because that's like January 19th, 2020 or something like that. And so there's a lot of organizations that are still dependent upon domain-based resources, older versions of Windows, things like that. And so we need... VMware either has to wait for the world to catch up to them, or they have to provide a way to start using UEM in these kind of mixed, not bleeding edge environments. And so what they've done is, part of this is Windows has helped them out by adding GPO capabilities to their MDM capabilities.
They've mapped more and more GPOs to CSPs, which is the CSP is a configuration service provider. It's basically it's an MDM
policy
for Windows 7.
Okay, yeah. And so, yeah, so Microsoft has done a lot of mapping for the GPOs that people use most commonly, right?
Right.
The lower level, like 300 or so GPOs.
And a lot of these were in Windows 10, 1703,
okay.
The creator's update.
Right. Now, that still leaves like 3,900 GPOs, right?
Yeah.
But then
another thing that they did is they have a CSP for
ADMX files.
Yes.
So we can just take those and just import them directly. But so VMware has taken that a step further and allowed you to basically, with an agent on an existing Windows desktop, you can examine what the resultant set of policies is that you get, because the way the GPOs work, they're kind of layered on top of each other, and sometimes they conflict, and they're automatically resolved as things go by based on priorities. And so you've got all your group policies that are applied to a device, but that doesn't necessarily mean all of them get applied. And once they're all overlaid on top of each other, what you get is the resultant set of policies. And that is what the agent or the tool that VMware is using grabs.
And is that one of the tools that they said they open sourced it?
That might be. I think it is, yeah.
How cool is that?
Yeah, that's cool. I think that's not a very hard thing to make, so they might as well open source it. So it's useful. And so what they'll do is they'll take all those settings from that resultant set of policies and export that into, I've heard, XML and JSON files. I think XML is what it actually is, but it exports it into some sort of consumable, parsable file that then AirWatch can use to deliver them to UEM-managed endpoints. And so it probably doesn't solve all of the GPO problems. I don't know. We didn't ask if it works with GP preferences, for example. It should work with custom group policy settings. And there's a few other things here and there that it may not work with. But for the most part, it carves off a lot of the actions that GPOs would do for us in a more traditional setting. Additionally, the other thing was domain-based resources, file and print services, which we asked this question last year. Can you join an AirWatch-managed Windows PC to a domain? And the answer was like, I don't know if that's a good idea. And they found a way to do that.
Yeah.
In fact, so that gives you a little bit of a bridge technology there so that you can still manage this stuff with UEM, but also via AirWatch, join it to the domain so that they can have access to file shares and print shares. The other cool thing about it is, or that they added, was they found a way to make SCCM and AirWatch coexist, which
you can use that for transitioning.
Exactly. And so, for the time being, if you wanted the reporting, the Workspace ONE Intelligence stuff, but you wanted to continue managing with SCCM, you could get that, and then just start to move little things over here and there. I got one more, and then.
I have a few more after that.
Okay, because there's so much shit here. They also wrote a tool that would go into SCCM and pull out all the applications from SCCM and turn them into AirWatch packages that could then be delivered via AirWatch, which, again, like, that's a big help.
Now, that's Microsoft's favorite tool.
Yeah, right. That one is the one I may be most dubious of, just because it takes a lot sometimes to make those packages and get all the configurations right and things like that. But maybe it's super easy to rip them out of SCCM. Once you've done all the hard work to put them into SCCM, maybe that's easy enough to pull them out. But again, so that's just another thing. Like, on paper, it seems awesome. I want to see it.
Yeah, and the other things on since you mentioned the Ubi, the out-of-the-box experience.
Everybody's taking furious notes, because
there are certain things that you can do because AirWatch is integrated with Dell, and to push down some things called provisioning packages, and as well, there's also a lot for in-place upgrades from 7 to 10 that we talked about.
Which is not easy to do.
There's a change from BIOS to UEFI.
Yep, and from MBR to GPT.
And I don't actually know what those acronyms stand for.
They changed the way a machine boots so they can boot more securely. So MBR is master boot record. I forget what GPT stands for. I forget. But MBR has been around for 30 years. I mean, that's just been the way things boot. But it's unsecure, because you can get in, a virus can actually overtake and rewrite the master boot record and make your machine do other things. In fact, the very first virus I ever got was an MBR virus. It was a floppy disk was infected. The MBR on a floppy disk was infected with this. It's called the NYB virus. And so as soon as you put this floppy in there, the machine like initializes the floppy to see if it can read it. So all you have to do is put it in. As soon as the green light turned on, you were screwed. And it rewrote the MBR on the hard drive, and then you couldn't get access to anything. You could, it was all still there, it didn't erase it, but you could still get it. So anyway, the MBR is just not a secure way of doing things. And so when Microsoft, with Windows 10, they switched to GPT, and so this is a more secure way of doing things. That combined with UEFI, which again, more secure BIOS. BIOS can be hacked. UEFI is not, I don't know if it's impossible, but like, you know, not bloody likely. So these two changes are important for Windows 10, important for security, and they are one of the reasons it's tough to upgrade from Windows 7 to Windows 10. So we're maybe not worried about application compatibility from going from 7 to 10. It's more of this system level, lower level stuff. Again, VMware did what they had to do and made it possible to... Which one did they do? Did they do the MBR to GPT one? And I think Microsoft did the one that went switched from BIOS to UEFI. Combination of VMware and Microsoft has made it possible to now do basically in-place upgrades from Windows 7 to Windows 10. Or you could use Mirage to do that, which I've forgotten about Mirage, but that's also an option. I would prefer to not use Mirage.
Yeah, so... there is clearly a lot there. So that's our first, like, 50 minutes of the podcast.
I'm out of breath, dude. Let's see. Okay. Our recording device has died. And so you are now hearing it probably a little bit more noisily because we also set up our backup phone to record this as well. We're well into this podcast, though. Apologize if the quality of the sound changed. I think we covered all of Workspace ONE now. Or have we missed anything?
There was some. They did talk about Chromebook management, which I covered on the blog. That's basically using Google's Chrome device management service as middleware. What Google did was they opened up APIs to that Chrome device management service.
Okay.
And as of right now, it's exclusive to AirWatch. That will open up at some point. Nobody knew exactly how long the terms would be when I talked to them. But for right now, it's exclusive. Plus, they also talked a good amount about Mac management and how apparently due to some changes with Apple File System that's coming on High Sierra, that Mac OS imaging is... they said essentially not possible anymore. So that means using a much more MDM-based approach, which Mac OS has supported MDM for a couple years now, and that means device provisioning without re-imaging the device and internet connected over the air commands.
With DEP, right?
Yep. Yeah. Now, of course, the thing with that is on the Mac, it's the same thing. You have all the traditional applications that aren't in the Mac App Store, so you need to have some other agent-based way of managing them. And I don't know when this came out, but apparently they included an implementation of Monkey into the AirWatch Mac agent.
Okay.
And so that's, you know, a very commonly used
Mac application management. Yeah.
Yeah.
So now we're talking about managing iOS and Android. We're talking about managing Windows. We're talking about managing Chromebooks and Macs.
Yeah.
All from the same platform.
Yeah.
All in the same way.
Yeah.
With intelligence.
Yeah.
And migrations.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's the U in Unified Endpoint Management.
No shit. So it's really hard to not come away from the show thinking, man, did they nail it? Again, to what degree? It's hard to tell. At the very least, you could say they are they're very much on the right path.
Yeah.
And while they may not be there just yet, they may not be convincing people to switch from traditional management of all these different devices to something that's more unified. They're way closer than I expected them to be just 1 year after last VMware.
Color gave impressed.
Yeah, without a doubt, I am. I did not expect to see this complete of an offering coming into the show. I don't know, did you? Probably from the mobility side, right? In the devices, the Chromebooks, Mac, that kind of a thing. That it was a smaller leap to get to where they are with those. So I can see that. I'm probably more impressed than you are, but still, I mean, I'm very excited to go to Atlanta and hang out with those guys.
Yeah. So we there were a couple of wider announcements. Obviously, the VMware on AWS thing is GA now. That was huge. The other thing it's a little bit more peripheral to our space. Have we actually, did you have any time to dig into App Defense?
No, not at all. From what I can tell, I mean, I happened upon the Bromium booth, but Simon Crosby wasn't there. But I talked to Dan Allen a little bit, and I said, you know, this is servers, right? And they confirmed that. So it appears to be more of a watching server-based application workloads. So we would think of apps more of a infrastructure, a platform sense, not apps like Outlook, right? And so App Defense is watching the activity of server workloads to see if they vary in any significant way that could indicate a security risk, which is, if that's accurate, it's kind of the low-hanging fruit, because servers just kind of do what they do, and like nobody should be firing up Internet Explorer or, you know, OneNote or something on a server, right? So if it sees that,
it's like we've said for years, servers are predictable, desktops are crazy.
Yeah, completely random. And so it's pretty easy to observe a server for a while and then use that empirical data to determine whether or not something is out of whack or not.
Yeah.
And so I'm not saying it's not useful. I'm saying it's not really relevant, I think, to our like EUC space. There's no reason it couldn't be. It couldn't morph into that. But I think right now they're just kind of dipping their toe and getting familiar with it in this level. Because everybody by now has learned that lesson that you just said. Like, servers beg to be standardized. They are perfect candidates for that kind of a thing. Whereas desktops, I mean, who knows? Like, if somebody sends around the YouTube video of a kitten yawning, like, that could, everybody goes to YouTube all of a sudden, and that machine could just light itself on fire because something happened weird at the same time for all of our desktops.
Yeah, so. That's where it's much more, this is from all I've been reading about machine learning. That's kind of like machine learning to, since trying to make rules about what a desktop should behave like would be so difficult.
Right.
You just have the machine learn over time, and that's another whole problem.
Yep, and there's not, every one of these security anomaly detection things is running some sort of ML, some sort of AI. We gave ExtraHop Addy, I think, the best in show award at Citrix Synergy because of what they can do capturing the data and then sending that up to the cloud to have more ML power applied to it to detect anomalies at the network level, like watching as packets go by to see what's happening. And that works across your entire system. So, I mean, there is room for VMware to grow this into something else. If it happens to have the same capabilities as some third-party platform, then great. You know, that's just one of those extra features that people will look to VMware for, or that people will sell people on VMware as a platform.
So, anything from the partners and the expo hall that stood out?
I talked to a few different people out there. We spent some time in the mobility zone. We talked about powwow. I spent some time talking to AMD, and they were showing off some of their stuff that I actually don't think I can talk about right now, but in the next week or two, they'll have some more announcements. I'm trying to think of who else is out there. Do you have anything on your mind?
So you saw the thin print serverless printing.
Yeah, thin print serverless printing. That was funny because Printer Logic is the company that started this serverless printing, which is basically managed direct IP printers. And so they have an agent that just creates a printer and connects your workstation directly to that printer rather than going through a print server, which is like the traditional way of doing printer management. All of those traditional printer management companies kind of laughed at that, and now ThinPrint created that. And now, to be fair, they've identified it as a smaller kind of environment workload, a non-complex workload. You know, once you're starting to throw huge jobs, there are lots and lots of jobs at a single printer that can confuse the printer, if you're on a terminal server, it could overload the spooler there, and so you'd rather have a separate print server in the mix to deal with that. So the way ThinPrint's approaching it is as a smaller to medium sized platform. So I fully expect to see Tricerat doing something. Uniprint probably going to do something. That kind of a thing. We saw Lakeside was cool. Lakeside won the best of VMworld award in the end user computing category because of some stuff they've added to SysTrack. They added two things that kind of work hand in hand. One was a synthetic transaction monitoring component where a lot of companies use LogMPI or AutoIt. Really, LogMPI is using AutoIt scripts to test response times as like a virtual user in their environments. And within those scripts now, you can add these calls into the SysTrack agent that will monitor the start and stop times and just add that to the pool of information that SysTrack already collects, which is pretty neat. And then the other thing that they added into SysTrack 8.3 was a user surveying tool, which means that you can, it allows you to fire off survey questions to your users to gauge their feedback based on events that SysTrack observes. And so, for example, with that synthetic transaction thing, if it notices Outlook takes a little bit longer to load as it runs through its script, you can then take that action item or take that alert and use that to kick off a survey question to all your users and say, is Outlook behaving slow to you right now, or is everything behaving all right? And so users can give you direct feedback on their actual perceived performance, not necessarily based on what we think the thresholds should be.
And so you can imagine all sorts of different ways to put that together.
Absolutely. Lakeside has a security risk assessment tool, and so that watches software patch levels and things like that. And so you can imagine a situation where your risk score went down for some reason. A user had their risk score go down 10 points in, after lunch one day, and that act of your risk score going down kicks off an alert that says, hey, we just noticed your risk score went down. Did you do anything?
Did you plug in a USB stick you found in the parking lot?
Yeah. Right, exactly. Is it black with a skull on it? But so any alert that Lakeside can do or can generate can be used to generate these survey questions. And so now we can get legit user feedback on things that we observe going on in the environment, which can help in a lot of different situations. And Lakeside's even thinking about ways to add like just user activity monitoring type things to it. Like if they plug in a USB stick, it should just pop up an alert that says, you probably shouldn't just plug in a USB stick, for example. The reason they won that is because of this interaction between them and the user and helping us narrow down a root causes for problems, anomalies that we might see. And it helps us gauge, what our thresholds should be for monitoring. Because we can make that up, but it's really just throwing some poop on the wall and seeing what sticks is where that starts. And this way we can actually use user feedback to tell us what actually is an okay threshold for performance versus what we think it should be. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, and then the runners up in that category, ControlUp, LiquidWare.
Yeah, both of those well-deserving. It's once we get into the deliberations and stuff that it becomes a little crazy. ControlUp Insights, they won at Citrix Synergy in the EUC category. And they definitely belonged in the running this time around. And LiquidWare, FlexApp, Profile Unity with FlexApp. Again, it solves a problem of simplifying managing applications, layering applications, and then they go so far as to make it easier to publish applications without actually having the applications on your terminal server, because they plug into Storefront and report back which applications there are layers for, where normally the executable actually has to be on that terminal server for you to see it. LiquidWare plugs in such a way that it doesn't have to be on there. You can start with a base image, and when a user wants that application, it shows up anyway. So it's a cool approach to that. And then they also enable Office 365, Outlook to work with Office 365 in terminal server environments and non-persistent VDI and things like that too. So again, well worthy of being in the discussion for those awards.
Also the security category of the awards was won by Skycure, the mobile threat defense vendor. And it's funny, there are five mobile threat defense vendors here in the mobility zone, which the mobility zone is not that big. And to have five, like this...
That's like a quarter of them.
This
maybe more.
This space, they're all reporting so much more... so many more inbound conversations over the last year. It's really becoming a thing now. And
is it FUD? Are there actual threats out there that people need to be worried about? Or
I mean, do people connect to random coffee shops and Wi-Fi?
Yeah.
So like that. I mean, obviously, mobile threat defense, and you can look to my GeekUp 365 session for more, or my series of articles on this. But it's mobile app reputation, which, if you think of like there are lots of poorly developed apps out there that are just done in insecure ways.
And right.
You can, or just think like third-party ad SDKs. That's, hey, you want to know about those apps because maybe you don't want those on your
right.
devices that someone is using as a point of sale or anything. Well, if it's a point of sale, mobile device is probably completely locked down, but
yeah.
you get the idea.
Yeah.
And then detecting compromised networks, and of course also other kind of basic things like various means of jailbreaking and root detection. Android has some APIs where apps can check to see with whether Google thinks the device looks the way that it should.
Okay.
So
there's a need for this.
And that
explains why there's so many of them there.
I mean, we've all been... You've never gotten a virus on your phone.
Yeah, that doesn't mean they're not there.
You've never gotten a malware.
Yeah.
You know, there have been a billion iPhones.
Right.
So obviously the threat model of this modern lockdown OS does put us in a very different starting place than we are with our old mobile devices.
Yeah.
But anyway, so Skycure, now part of Symantec, and it's becoming Symantec Endpoint Protection Mobile, won that award. And then a judge's choice company called Aftdome, which I've written about before. This is a judge's choice for startup.
Which means they didn't even enter.
Yeah.
And we just suggested them. And to see if they were worthy of a Judge's Choice Award. And then 15 nerds that were locked in a room with no Mountain Dew decided to that they were worthy of that.
So they can automatically integrate SDKs. They don't use the term app wrapping, but it's like if you take an SDK and...
I got their demo. That shit sounds like app wrapping to me, man.
But what they can do is they now have SDKs from several different EMM vendors, plus a number of other partners, plus they have their own security features that can be app wrapped in.
And that's what sets it apart from app wrapping, is the fact that we can do multiple SDKs.
Yeah. So normally you go to the app wrapping tool of the vendor that you want to support.
Okay.
But this is like if you're an ISV and you want to support multiple EMMs, you could put in multiple SDKs at once.
For those, okay.
And also there's always been the arguments like, hey, app wrapping is just easier than manually integrating the SDK. So
okay.
if you're in-house, you might only have to worry about supporting one EMM vendor.
Gotcha.
But if you have to make updates and redeploy the app and all the time.
That makes sense. Yeah, because then you don't want to do it one for each. You can just do it one time and then attach the SDKs for each of the
So
that's cool.
In mobile application management space, we've been talking about SDKs and app wrapping for a long time.
Yeah.
And I think we're still going to be talking about that for quite a while.
Yeah.
You know, Android for Work now, Android Enterprise has come along quite a ways, and Apple. Now I'm getting on a whole different topic. There are some BYOD oriented improvements that I'd like to see, but
by and large,
SDKs are going to be a fact of life. So having tools like AppDome.
Yeah, we're still seeing progress though. Yeah. So yeah, that's cool. I'm going through stuff. I think we might be wrapping up.
Yeah, all of these things that we talked about today would all be worthy of some very long in-depth articles. Even some other conversations. I had a great conversation with Samsung about Knox and their strategy and also about that Dex device, which we'll save that for another podcast. Having another devices podcast.
Yeah, and HP's device as a service.
Yeah.
Ugh.
So bottom line is...
I like devices as a service, by the way. The idea. I don't like the acronym.
Yeah. These podcasts, they're good because I like doing these at the end of shows, which I think since you and I have been doing these, we've done them all at the end of the shows. So it does give us a little time to synthesize what we've learned and track down the details.
Yep.
And this is where we've honed our talking points in conversations with people all week. And now you've gotten...
In an hour and 15 minutes or whatever we're at, yeah.
Have gotten all of our talking points for the week.
I feel like we're all over the place.
Yeah.
But I think you have, if you think this was all over the place, you should have been here all week.
Yeah, and hey, we have the energy of being live from the show floor with, what's the song playing behind us?
Fox on the Run by Sweet.
Yeah. We'll see. So we'll see how the noise canceling on these works.
Yeah, unfortunately, our normal recording device, the batteries decided to die halfway through, but thankfully we planned ahead. We know that things are going to fail. Yeah. We've been doing this long enough. So we have our backup iPhone thing happening. So if you did notice a sound change somewhere along the way, that's what happened. We'll make the best of it.
Yeah, and if you missed some of the details from the background noise, I think each of us have our next half dozen articles.
Oh yeah, planned
out.
No problem.
So there better not be any other news in the next 3 weeks because we're going to be busy writing about this stuff.
Yeah, even though VMworld Europe is in 2 weeks.
Yeah. Well.
All right. Well, I'm ready to go to sleep. Maybe take a nap, then have a beer, a celebratory, we're done with the podcast, done with VMworld beer. So I think it's time to wrap it up. So thanks everybody for listening.
Thank you, Gabe. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Hey, and Ruben came back. So, okay. All right, with that, signing off.
See you guys.
We can
see you next
VMworld. We can hit the end of this now. Where's the...